All of that gray matter inside your head would be so much cauliflower if it wasn't for synapses, the super-fast switches that make your brain cells into, well, your brain. Now, scientists at the National Institute of Standards and Technology have developed a superconductive switch. They believe these switches could connect electronic components into brain-like systems. Joining me with more, NIST physicist Mike Schneider. Dr. Schneider, good to have you on.
Thanks a lot, Tom.
Tell us about this project. What does this superconductor switch look like, and what is it made of?
Oh, sure. So it's relatively small, down around a few microns, and it is made of mostly metal, niobium, and in between two slices of this niobium metal is kind of the interesting part that is makes up the synapse, and that is nanoclusters of manganese in a silicon matrix.
Now, let me just ask you about that niobiumite number on the periodic table. Is that one?
Number 41.
Oh, so it has been around for a little while.
Oh, yeah. It's pretty standard metal.
So this is, I guess, the breakthrough here, correct me if I'm wrong, is that you can achieve superconductivity not at absolute zero temperatures.
That's actually, the niobium technology itself has been around for quite some time. And in fact, there's a large program working on doing digital computing with niobium Josephson junctions. That's run out of the IARPA cryogenic computing complexity program. And so niobium Josephson junctions have been around for a while, and they're well known. We're actually leveraging that heavily in ours. The new part is really this nano-clustered manganese in the silicon, and using that. That's what's kind of giving us the synaptic properties.
So it does operate at cold temperatures.
It does, absolutely. This is where we're operating at 4 Kelvin, which is liquid helium temperature. The superconducting temperature for niobium is around 9 Kelvin. So we're a little bit below that, and 4 Kelvin then ends up to be an easy place to operate, relatively speaking.
Well, better to be a little colder, just in case.
Exactly.
And what is a synaptic quality? What does that mean?
So what we're able to do is we're able to vary what's called the critical current of the Josephson junction. What that means is, in a superconductor, you have zero resistance up until a certain amount of current is reached. That amount of current is the critical current. And what we can do is, by varying the magnetic order of these manganese clusters, we can tune the critical current in a way that is almost analog. And so that gives us kind of a continuous change of the weight over actually about a factor of 100.
And what is the practical meaning of that?
What this does is it gives us an element to apply a device, basically, that we can apply this weighting, and that then mimics kind of what's happening in your brain. So these niobium Josephson junctions, the standard type, emit voltage spikes, just like neurons in your brain. And in your brain, what happens is you have a neuron. It's connected to a lot of other neurons, 1,000 or in some places maybe 10,000. And the neuron will send out a spike, and this spike is then weighted by the synapse, and the downstream neuron decides whether or not it's going to do anything based on the input, and that mostly depends on how this weighting from the synapse goes. And so having this sort of variable critical current element now, we can duplicate that same sort of process in a hardware.
So that would make a computer that is what, much faster than what is possible now?
For particular classes of problems, that's absolutely right. Another place where this is drawn is on neural nets. So in software, they use this same interaction where you have a node and you have a weighting, and then the next node sees how the weighting comes in from all the previous nodes and decides what to do. And those have been, in the last few years especially, really taking over certain areas like image recognition, language translation, and things like that. So for those classes of problems, this type of computing works extremely well.
So this gets us into this whole area of artificial intelligence and machine learning.
Absolutely.
And does it also allow, as you mentioned, many synapses might be connected to many, many neurons? Does it allow computer processors to address much larger memory blocks than they could before?
So it's the way that we've been envisioning this is actually the synapse itself is sort of the memory unit. That weight ends up being the important part. And so you don't have to go out and address a memory and come back and perform an operation. And that's one of the places where we get this substantial speed up in this system.
We're speaking with NIST physicist Mike Schneider. Now that this thing exists, is it something that's manufacturable? And what's the plan for these synaptic types of switches that you've built?
Oh, that's a fantastic question. So what we've done is we've demonstrated single devices. So, you know, we've made tens of these things, and they work really well. We're very excited. However, to make practical computing systems, we need millions or more. And so really our next focus is trying to scale these up and finding out what kind of problems we run into. So it's sort of a long way from where we are to where we would need to get to really make an impact on computing. But the properties that we have in these current devices are very promising. So it seems very much worthwhile to start trying to scale these and see how things go.
Is there a semiconductor manufacturing-based process that could be adapted to this type of thing even?
Absolutely. So this is one of the nice things about niobium. It's a pretty easy metal to work with. Silicon and manganese are relatively benign materials. And so we have been doing pretty straightforward fabrication that's heavily borrowed from the semiconductor industry. And some of the superconducting digital electronic industry has built up a lot of knowledge in terms of some of the specifics of how to etch niobium, things like that. And so we're leveraging all of that pretty heavily.
Is NIST trying to commercialize this or trying to get this out into the commercial space? What's the plan to get it rolling?
Well, so we have filed a patent on this particular technology, and our patent technology office is sort of handles things from that standpoint. We are very much interested in tech transfer. And so it, you know, we'll push on it here. And then we're also looking, we have talked with some people in sort of small startup type companies in terms of doing some sort of tech transfer.
Do you see this eventually as a supercomputing type of thing, or could it migrate into everyday systems such as autonomous vehicles and that kind of thing?
You know, I would put this more into a supercomputing type system because of the 4 Kelvin. It works well in large scale systems where you can just cool to 4 Kelvin and you say, oh, there's a energy overhead of about a factor of 1,000. As long as you're in a large scale system in the cloud or data center or something like that, that's no problem because they are so efficient. You still end up winning. But in terms of a autonomous car or things like that, it gets a little bit trickier. So I'd say more in the large scale system.
Yeah, or else, you know, the weather we've been having here in Washington has been cold enough. What about space? Would that's cold there too?
Yes, although I'm not so familiar about all the additional constraints that you have when you start putting things into space. So that's an interesting question.
Sure. Are we months off, years off, decades off?
I'd say about 10 years is the kind of realistic approximation, and that's sort of based on looking at other technologies of first demonstration until you make it into a product. If you look historically, 10 years is about the mark that it takes to really get something scaled up and into a product.
And by the way, you mentioned the size of these switches so that when you build tens of them at a time, you can't see them, can you?
Oh, no, not at all.
Not like the first transistor, which was the size of a thumb.
Right. Yes, this is part of the nice thing of leveraging off of all the things that have been developed for the semiconductor industry is that we already have great optical lithography tools that are in existence that we can just use.
NIST scientist Mike Schneider, thanks so much for joining me.
Well, thank you, Tom.
Find a link to more information and to this interview at federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive. Subscribe to all of our interviews at iTunes or Podcast One.